This is the Fight Network.
Let the meltdown begin. MMA Meltdown Radio, presented by the Fight Network, SiriusXM Channel 167. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's do this thing. We'll be with you for the next 60 minutes or so. Heidi Fang will join us from Las Vegas, Nevada. Joey Odessa will join us from Costa Rica. And we'll rock and roll. There's a ton of stuff to get to. We've got UFC Fight Night 53 and 54 on Saturday. An old school doubleheader. Forget about baseball. As Ernie Banks once so eloquently stated, it's a beautiful day for baseball. Hey, let's play two. It's a great day for fighting. Hey, let's fight twice. It's all good. We're going to have fights all day long. Got an afternoon card from Europe and then the card from Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. So we'll break it down with Joey Odessa. We'll crunch some numbers. Get Heidi Fang's thoughts on everything that's going on. And Heidi's good stuff. She's in Vegas. She was at the card the other night. She goes to those Nevada State Athletic Commission hearings, which are pretty much big circuses. You know, Vegas is the entertainment capital, I'm not so sure of the world, but I'll say of North America. I don't know. They call themselves the entertainment capital of the world. I haven't been everywhere in the world, so I can't vouch for that, but Vegas is pretty damn entertaining, nevertheless. So Heidi Fang will join us. So I'm interested to get her thoughts on the Tim Kennedy, Yoel Romero situation. Stoolgate, as we'll call it. Stoolgate. Man, I wish I would have come up with that today on the TV show. Son of a bitch. I didn't think about that. We have Frank Trachtenberg on the other side of the glass. Stoolgate is actually pretty good. I didn't think of that for the TV show. So the radio show gets the A-list material.
Two straight stool gates for Yoel Romero.
Yeah, that's right. Stool gate. Yet people were sending out gifts as well of Kennedy grabbing Romero's gloves, which he's not supposed to be doing. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, really. Did Romero's corner deliberately leave the stool out there? Probably. Be hard to argue that they don't know how much time that they have. Like, they know. They know. It's an interesting situation there. Like, there's a lot of people to blame on this. There's a lot of people to blame. Like, really, there's no way that his corner doesn't know that they're just trying to stall. And then you got Big John McCarthy, who's pretty much got a trigger finger when it comes to fights right now in the cage. For some reason, he just sort of stood there and let it happen. Some people are arguing that McCarthy should have called the fight, that he wasn't ready. You know, he wasn't ready to answer the bell. That's it. He loses. But then you've got Dana White saying, and I don't know if Dana White's just saying this to take pressure off of Romero because he wants to push Romero, or this genuinely happened and believes this, is that he said, no, we're to blame. The UFC is to blame for that because we hire the cut guys, which is a good point. It's a good point, but you never know what's really true in the fight game. It's probably a little bit of everything, really. But he stated, Romero's guys weren't the guys that put the Vaseline on Romero's face, which is a good point. The corner isn't doing that. It's the cut guys who were hired by the UFC. Stitch and all those guys that you see in those jackets are hired by the UFC. They're not hired by the corner. In boxing, it's different. You know, guys are hiring their corner men and their cut men. In the UFC, they all have the same cut men. That's the benefit. Whether you're on the Fight Pass Facebook fight or you're the main event, you've got Stitch, handling your face during the fight. Now, it wasn't Stitch that did this. But the cut guy, and it's funny, we only know who Stitch is. Every other cut guy is just the other guys. Stitch Duran's done a good job of marketing himself on this. Stitch, it wasn't me, Duran. But yeah, Dana is stating that there was a big glob of Vaseline on the face, like a huge glob. And he's like, I don't know how the hell, why they put that much Vaseline on the guy's face. And it wasn't Romero's corner that did that. It was the UFC hired guys that did that. So he said, we take the blame for this. But then he's like, you know, Romero kind of won the fight anyways, which he kind of did. Kennedy didn't get a chance to sit on a stool after because he got his ass knocked out, right?
Yeah.
If you're Kennedy, you've got a lot more of a beef if you lost a decision somehow. The fact that you got knocked out a minute and a half later, whatever the hell it was, kind of, you know, takes it away a little bit. And then after Romero, he's trying to do everything to shut the crowd up. He's like, I love you. I fight for you. I love God. Evidently, there were a bunch of Satanists in Vegas the other night because they weren't buying into it. They're like, boo, they didn't care. You know, interesting. You know, maybe the fact that I had Romero and I picked Romero and I bet on Romero, maybe that has made me a little bit biased in all of this, you know, which is possible. Subliminally, I'm pretty good at separating my personal thoughts and my bets with reality. But on this one, you know, I'm trying to put myself in Kennedy's shoes, and I'm trying to imagine if I had money on Kennedy, whether I would be outraged. And the answer is probably, yeah. I'd probably be pretty pissed. I'd probably be saying, he didn't answer the bell. He's sitting on his stool right after he got knocked out. He was basically out on his feet. I thought he was going to collapse before he even got to the stool. Like, after the round, he was stumbling around. He didn't know where the hell he was going. I was even worried the doctor was going to run it and stop it. Romero is pretty freaking lucky. I think it's one of these deals. Normally, you know, I would be full of rage, but it's one of these deals where it is what it is. It happened. You know, you can point the blame at a lot of people. Hey, Kennedy, you got knocked out. What do you know, really? You know, it's not like you got screwed in a decision. You got knocked out after. The guy beat you. You know, you want to get all technical, we'll say, all right, you shouldn't have grabbed our gloves four times earlier during the fight, which you did. You know, it goes both ways. And ultimately, it's the cut guy that puts the Vaseline on. So, you know, it's an interesting debate. We'll get Heidi Fang's thoughts on that. So, yeah, Romero was victorious. Dominic Cruz comes back, and Cruz cruises, and not just cruises, but Cruz crushes. Dominic Cruz was, man, this guy hadn't fought in 3 years. 3 years minus, like, 4 days. Forget about ring rust. No ring rust with Dominic Cruz, evidently. Every fighter is going to start taking 3 years off. Maybe GSP is going to come back in 3 years and be as lethal. That was unbelievable. Mizugaki's a tough guy, too. He just destroyed him, toyed with him. Now he gets the title shot, and deservedly so. And I was one of the critics that were stating that he shouldn't have gotten an immediate title shot, and he didn't. He took care of business, and now he deserves a shot. It's pretty clear that he does. Katzingano and Amanda Nunes. Great fight. Great fight. Very entertaining, like a lot of the women fights are. Katzingano was getting just beat up in the first round. Amanda Nunes was just like, she was possessed. She was throwing kicks, punches, ground and pound. The vicious kicks when Zingano was on her back and she wouldn't let her up. And Zingano, who of course lost her husband this year, had the knee surgery this year, like a physical and mental issues to overcome for Katzingano, getting beat up in the first round. You know, I felt bad. I'm thinking, man, everything this girl's been through, now she's going to get pummeled here. Yet she's one tough-ass chick. She's one tough fighter, and now she's going to get Ronda Rousey. You know, she was supposed to get the title shot before, but she got injured. So now she's going to get Ronda Rousey. And it's funny because before, I was in the minority in stating that I think this Katzingano fighter can actually is the one fighter that could give Ronda Rousey a fight. You know, she is well-rounded. She's very good on the ground. And she's tough as hell. So I hate the cliche, oh, it's, you know, the toughest test yet. But yeah, Katzingano, I think, is more complete. I think Katzingano's better than Carmouche. I think she's better than Tate, as she showed. She beat Tate. She pretty much beat up Tate. It was kind of close, but you know, then those knees to the face, and Tate was getting messed up pretty good. She complained about the stoppage. But seeing the beating that Nunes put on Zingano, Zingano's tough as hell, but being tough doesn't win you championships. You know, being tough, that's all good. Yeah, you're tough. You know, John Moraga is tough as hell, but it didn't win him a championship, right? Like, Kat Zingano seems to have a lot of holes in her game from a defensive standpoint. Like, is her stand-up better than Ronda Rousey's? No. Rousey's stand-up keeps getting better. So, yeah, is Zingano's stand-up better? No. Like I said earlier, Zingano is, like, she's very good. She qualified for the jiu-jitsu tournament. She's the only American in Abu Dhabi. But is she better than Rousey on the ground? No. She's not going to, you know, get out of that arm bar. So as good as Zingano is, yeah, every, you know, check, check, check. Like, she's got toughness going for her. She's got a ton of heart. Rousey respects her, not going to talk crap about her. It'll be a different type of fight. Interesting fight. I look forward to the fight. But I don't think Zingano can beat Ronda Rousey. Maybe Holly Holm. Maybe Holly Holm can box her and knock her out. I think that's the only way you're going to beat Rousey, if you knock her out. And I'm not so sure Zingano can knock her out. Cowboy Cerrone beats Eddie Alvarez. It's close with the judges, but you know, it wasn't really all that close. And I had Alvarez, and I say that. Alvarez's size, you just realized when he was in there against Cerrone just how small he actually is. And it's a different world right now, Bellator and the UFC. You know, not to take anything away from Michael Chandler and Eddie Alvarez, because their fights were great, but you see Eddie Alvarez get in there, and you know, what's Cerrone? Cerrone, you know, you can make an argument Cerrone is a top five guy. And I'm just saying this off the top of my head. You know, top seven guy. And the point being, Eddie Alvarez, you know, got beaten down. Like, it's not like, oh, you know, it was that close and Alvarez deserves something else after. If anything, Eddie Alvarez should think long and hard about going to 145, where Conor McGregor is. Now, Conor McGregor, he's backing up his smack talk. Unlike Chael Sonnen, who just ran his mouth but never backed anything up, you know, at least Conor McGregor is backing this stuff up. But I thought it was pretty interesting after when he was in the cage and he said, everyone's going to remember the smack talk part of everything that he says. But when you know he said the footwork of all these guys in the UFC is awful, and I take advantage of their bad angles. It's almost like he gave away the secret sauce. It's like the caramel bar. He gave away how they get the caramel in there. Don't tell everyone, Connor, that the reason that you're winning is because their footwork sucks, because now every guy is going to be thinking, I got to work on my footwork and the angles. Don't give it away. Don't give it away. But then Connor also just recently stated, I guess it was after the fight, when he said he's going to be champion because the division is full of has-beens and guys that aren't very good. And, you know, there are you know, the dearth of competition for Aldo before wasn't very big. Right now, there's a ton of people gunning for this thing. You know, you got Cub Swanson. You've got Edgar. You got Conor McGregor. You got Mendez. You've got Aldo. Suddenly, the 145 class is a good one. And if I'm Eddie Alvarez, and I'd think long and hard about dropping down to 145 in the UFC. Is, you know, it looks like, listen, Conor McGregor has made $150,000 for this fight. Probably more that we don't know about. So, you know, there's some money to be made in this division right now. That's the bottom line. You know, if you're going to fight a guy that's making a ton of money, it's a trickle-down effect. Conor McGregor might be disliked by some, but, you know, he can bring big money fights into division. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Heidi Fang will step up and in from Las Vegas, Nevada. Joey Odessa will join us as well. MMA Meltdown Radio continues.
This is the Fight Network.
MMA Meltdown Radio continues. Sirius XM Channel 167, presented by the Fight Network. I am Gabriel Morenci. Joey Odessa will join us from Costa Rica a little bit later on. tomorrow on MMA Meltdown TV, although I'm still pissed off I didn't come up with Stoolgate earlier. I don't know what it is. I think it's the darkness of the studio. I come up with better material than I do under the bright lights of television for one reason or another. But we have Mark Pavlich on the program tomorrow. MFC president Mark Pavlich. Pavlich has kind of chilled out over the last couple of years. He used to always rip Dana White and stuff like that, but he doesn't do that quite as much anymore. he did have some choice words for Ed Soros. I believe his exact quote was, Ed Soros is nothing more than a pimp who's a parasite who takes off of other fighters. They've got like an MFC-RFA thing feud going on. So let's bring in Heidi Fang. She's got a feud with nobody. MMAFightCorner.com's Heidi Fang. What's going on, Heidi? How you doing?
Hey, not much. How are you?
They were doing good. Like I said, yeah, you got everyone loves you, Heidi. You got no feuds. Like Mark Pavlich, he's got a lot of feuds. You ever had Pavlich on before?
Yes, I have. And it was on what you were previously talking about. He was more on a Dana rant than he was Ed
Warren
rant.
His rants are good. He knows what he's doing, though. You know, it's funny, too, because in real life, he's actually a very, you know, humble, soft-spoken guy. He really is. I wouldn't say that if it isn't true, but, you know, he knows what he's doing. He just he gets his name out there, and he likes to stir the pot. But, you know, a ton of stuff going on here, Heidi, and there's so much stuff I want to get to, but let's get with I wanted to get your thought on this Romero-Kennedy stuff. I thought it was really interesting, the video after of Kennedy confronting Romero after saying, come on, man, you really lost the fight. You know, you didn't get up. You know, you were cheating. That's not cool. Yet, you know, McCarthy didn't stop the fight. McCarthy could have said, whoa, that's it. You know, you took too long. It's over. That's in McCarthy's power to do that. He didn't do it. And then I find it really interesting that Dana White says, and which I guess to be true, that, you know, it's true that the cornermen are hired by the UFC. So he said it was our guys that actually put way too much Vaseline on his face. So it's almost like everyone's sort of to blame in this. And then Romero goes and smashes Kennedy right after that. So you know, it's real interesting. I say a rematch is in order. It was a real fun fight first time. So yeah, let's do it again.
Yeah, you know, which is interesting that you say that because I don't think that Dana was necessarily warmed to that idea right afterwards. Somebody did ask him whether or not that should, you know, be the case, if they should have the rematch. And Dana had said something to the fact of, you know, well, okay, this is the unfortunate outcome. It's an odd thing. It doesn't often happen. But he said you can't take anything away from the win. It was an awesome fight. And so I think the general consensus right now from the public is, yeah, let's do a rematch. But I don't know if necessarily that's the plan right now in the immediate future for Romero and Kennedy.
I wonder if the public would feel differently if it was the American as opposed to the Cuban. You know, just a little bit here. Like, Romero's getting booed after. He's like, hey, I love God. I love everybody. He's still getting booed. I think people should have shown a little bit more. He's not in control of that stuff. And it's almost like Mike Tyson and Buster Douglas, isn't it? You know, with the long count with Douglas, but nevertheless, Tyson ended up losing. I agree with Dana. We can't take away from Romero. He's a beast. He's a badass. Can't take anything away from it. I generally like to shy away from rematches, and anytime there's a close fight, oh, I want a rematch, and I don't buy into that, but it was a good fight. But I guess Dana believes Romero should be able to get on with his life and chalk it up as a win is a win.
That's what it sounds like for now. But then again, that's an immediate reaction right after having seen the fight. I don't know if he'll review it or if anything will be done with the state commission out here in Nevada. I spoke with Bob Bennett after the fight and asked him if Kennedy had a case to appeal. He says, you know, it's a slim case, but that they will review the tape. They will look at all the other environmental things that were in the way, such as, you know, John McCarthy, the stool, the people not understanding, the extra Vaseline, the UFC cut mask that much Vaseline. So there's all these other factors that are playing into it. And I think that over time, they'll look at that tape, they'll make a decision. And I think regardless, you know, Kennedy will probably submit the case to appeal. He put out the whole code and everything, had it ready, knew where it was, found it right on the NSAC.org website, and put it out there on Twitter. So I think that he's definitely still fired up about it, and I would expect that Kennedy would file an appeal. Whether or not that gets overturned or anything happens, I don't know yet, but, you know, it's early to say what will go down. But I do plan on following up with the commission probably in a few days just to see where they are with that.
Yeah, I love follow. That's one of one of the best parts of following you on Twitter is you go to these hearings. I love the minute by minute updates with this stuff. They're always circuses, and I was unaware, like a lot of other people actually, that the Nevada State Athletic Commission had the power to make you do community service as well. Like they could fine. I knew they could fine you, and I knew that obviously they were in control of your license, but I didn't know they could add on community service as well on top of it. That, I thought that was kind of funny. But on a more serious note, the Nevada State Athletic Commission, I imagine since it's a government agency, Vanderlei Silva, like if he doesn't pay, does he get arrested? Like, let's say he just says, screw you guys, I'm not paying. I know he's got a gym in Vegas, so he sort of has to pay unless he wants to close the gym and just move to Brazil. But, how does that work? I mean, Are they a government agency, so it's like owing like parking tickets, he better pay, otherwise or else type of deal?
Yeah, I don't think they would necessarily impose a jail term or arrest him or anything, but I think it would come down to something that because he does own a property that's legitimately underneath his name, plus I believe a home as well that he owns here in Las Vegas, they can probably freeze assets, and they could probably, impose the fine in that way, like garnishing wages, so to speak.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking as well, because, everyone immediately was like, wow, if he's retiring and, they banned him for life, screw you. I'm not going to pay you the $70K. What's the point? But like you said, he's got a house there. He's got a gym there. So, I was kidding last week, that don't be surprised if you show up to the gym and the lights are off and he's not there anymore. But for $70,000, it's probably not worth it to uproot your life. And, he's made some money over the years. So before we get to this weekend's multiple cards, it was a pretty, back-to-back great weekends. That fight card from Japan was awesome last week in the overnight hours. And this card was pretty damn good, too. I mean, I had to... I wrote down notes here because I didn't want to forget some of these fights. But Demetrius Johnson, once again, this guy's just awesome. He doesn't get the credit that he deserves because not everybody, loves that weight class. But, this guy's making an argument for being a pound-for-pound guy. The guy's just finishing fighters now, I think, three times in a row. Conor McGregor lives up to the hype, beats down Dustin Poirier, looks like he's ready to take on the world. Cowboy Cerrone, not just beating, sort of average fighters, beats a pretty good fighter in Eddie Alvarez pretty convincingly. Dominic Cruz looks better than ever coming back, and Kat Zingano showed a ton of heart. Great storylines across the board with this card.
Absolutely, and the two that really stood out to me were the returns of Dominic Cruz and Kat Zingano, because once people have been out for such an extended period of time, you had Cruz out for 3 years, Kat Zingano almost a year and a half, and what Kat had been through emotionally, you just didn't know what her mental state would be like. You didn't know if her ACL was going to hold up after the time away and putting all that adrenaline into yourself in that moment in the fight. And Cruz, obviously, being away for 3 years and having spent a lot of time behind the analyst desk, you had to wonder if he still had that fire, and that was clearly apparent that he does. So it was amazing to see their comebacks and to prove that they do have that contender status still in them, and that they you could come out without losing a step, basically. Neither of them. I mean, Kat looked a little sluggish in that first round against Amanda Nunes, but she sure found a way to manage that fight and pose her will and come back in the second and third rounds to eventually end it. But it was quite something to watch her go through that adversity in the cage and then come out ahead.
And Dominic Cruz and Dillashaw is going to be an epic fight. Yeah, that's just going to be absolutely sick. It's amazing how fighters are always seeming so dominant. And, we can't see when this guy's ever going to lose. And then, boom, they're just out of the picture, forgotten about. And I'm bringing up Henan Barão. it just seemed like yesterday that Man, Aparao guy is unbelievable. He never loses. He's won 31 fights in a row. He's going to be champ forever. Now the guy can't make weight, and he's completely out of the picture, and nobody's really crying about it. All right, so before we let you go, Heidi, and we always appreciate you taking the time to be with us. We're sorry for calling you a little later than normal. There's all the hype about Conor McGregor, but not as much hype about Gunnar Nelson, because Gunnar doesn't have the same personality. You know, and he's from Iceland, not Ireland. But there's some Conor, you know, connections there. They've trained together. Gunnar's father's known Conor since he was a kid. So there are some connections there. And I only bring it up just because I think Gunnar Nelson is pretty freaking good as well. I mean, this guy just finishes people. He's only been out of the first round four times in his entire career. Like, he finishes people. Here's a step up in class against a guy like Rick Story. But honestly, Rick Story's alternated wins and losses in his last eight fights, and he's 4-5 in his last nine. What do you think of it?
Remember when Rick Story was like a possible contender and won six fights in a row? I haven't seen that guy in a while, but he sure did look better.
Charlie Brennan ruined his life, Heidi.
Yeah, he did. But you know, in the last couple of fights, Rick Story seems to have a different mojo about him, so to speak. And I don't know if it will be enough for that grappling prowess that we've seen out of Gunnar Nelson. He is really flawless. He's technical. The way that he can come into the cage and smother his opponent and just make it look so seamless in his transitions. He really has something there in that department. But what has to be seen is, can he stand and strike with somebody? Can Rick Story bring it to him and pressure him and make it a war and a dogfight? I don't know if that'll be the case, because he'll have to get inside and close to do it. But in that case, where he is trying to push that pace and is trying to change the tempo of the fight to swing it in his way, will he get into too close a quarters with Nelson, where Nelson can take it to the ground and eventually submit him, which is what we know he'll probably be looking for. But yeah, like you said, a ton of first-round wins. And very, very at the top of the game when it comes to just grappling and jiu-jitsu. And I'm expecting this to be a really fun main event here for Sweden. But I think Gunnar's definitely got the edge.
And the main event in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, is Rory McDonald taking on Tarek Saffiedine. Rory is a 5-1 favorite. I think Rory's going to win the fight, but I was surprised to see the number that high. You know, maybe 3-1. I was surprised to see 5-1, Heidi. Do you give Tarek a puncher's chance, or a kicker's chance, we should say?
Oh, absolutely. Tarek Saffiedine can't be counted out of this fight. I mean, he's been out for probably about 10 months or so. And I just think, though, that even though he has had that type of layoff, that that's not going to play any sort of role in him dragging in the fight or starting off slow. And Rory McDonald, you know, he's got one of just the best jabs in the fight game. That's always going to be there for him. And whether or not he can use that in volume and disrupt maybe the timing of Tarek Saffiedine, keep him at bay, keep him where he wants him in the fight, using that jab to set up other things for himself. Yeah, and the takedown, obviously, I think will work in Rory's favor. But a 5-1 favorite is a little steep. I mean, Tarek Saffiedine, you can never count this guy out of a fight. I think he's probably been an underdog more than enough times, and he's literally come through. I mean, look at the strike force belt. I don't think a lot of people thought that he would come through with that, you know.
Heidi Fang, MMA Fight Corner, the website, the radio show. Follow her on Twitter. Heidi, it's always great getting you on the program. I always appreciate the time. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us tonight.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
There's Heidi Fang with us. Great stuff as always with Heidi. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Joey Odessa from Costa Rica.
This is the Fight Network.
MMA Meltdown Radio continues. I'm Gable Morenci, Sirius XM Channel 167. Check out MMA Meltdown TV Wednesday night at 11 o'clock. Eastern replays Thursday afternoon. MFC President Mark Pavlich with us. And you know, I think Mark's going to owe me a favor as I've hustled up a counter move to get some MFC going, which, counter move is all the rage right now when it comes to a fantasy MMA. It's good times. We always have the Fight Network free rolls, me and Robin Black rolling along. So don't forget to check out my Twitter at Sports Rage to get caught up to date with all of our free rolls. Joey Odessa steps up and in. Joey's not giving free rolls to people. No free bets in this world. That not in the real world, just the fantasy world, Joey.
No handouts, only under the Obama administration if you live in the States.
That's why you know, they call it fantasy. It's a fantasy. And reality is different. There's no fantasy sports in Vegas. You know, you go to the window, I think you can bet fantasy sports, but you can't. You better have money at the window. So, Joey, you know, we played a little whiskey in a jar coming in here. And speaking of money at the window, Conor McGregor's got some money at the window. It wasn't long ago this guy was on welfare. Now he's cashing some big checks. Word is he got $150,000 for his win the other night, 75 and 75. But I'm hearing that he actually made a little bit more on the side as well. Dana White says that Conor McGregor is bigger than George St. Pierre and bigger than Brock Lesnar. I think Dana has got a short memory, and that's an exaggeration. But, you know, what do you make of Conor making 150? Some fighters are bitching, sort of, and like, oh, that's too much. You know, it's only his fourth fight in the UFC. Other guys are making way less. And in reality, if you're going to hype him up this much or you use his name this much, you could argue that he should have gotten $300,000. Like, that's what fighters should get paid, actually. So we can't have it both ways and bitch about Dana not paying fighters enough and then complain when he pays another guy too much.
These guys, they complain. I'm glad he got $150,000. I think, you know, I want to see these guys make as much as possible. But when they don't, I just don't like hearing them cry about it. You know, speaking of crying, you know, the Kennedy incident, they're calling it, what, Stoolgate? You know, I just turn the page, move on, don't dwell in the past. You know, if you want to make more money, get out there like Conor McGregor, knock guys out.
Well, that's the thing if you're Kennedy. You got knocked out after. So, I mean, me and Frank talked about this earlier, and I thought I was original in coming up with Stoolgate. You know, I guess we could say it's not the first time someone got screwed over with Vaseline being the cause. With the Vaseline on his face here, Joey. But Dana White says, hey, it's our cut guys that put too much Vaseline on. Blame us if you're going to blame anybody. You could make an argument that McCarthy should have called it. But then after, you know, if you're Kennedy, you got knocked out. Like, you know, whatever. So he took a couple of extra seconds on the stool. He still knocked your ass out after.
Well, I'm also of the opinion that, like, I thought that McCarthy did a great job not stopping it in the first round. I mean, Romero dominated the first round, and then he got, you know, he got. I didn't even notice the grab of the glove until afterwards. But, I mean, he had Romero hurt. They did the right thing in the corner, right or wrong thing, whatever. His corner, whether it was intentional, unintentional, who knows. I really, you know, I watched it in Spanish, which gives me, I love Joe Rogan, and I enjoy his commentary, and I won't watch it with other guys commentating. I'll turn down the sound. But I caught it in Spanish, so I didn't catch the glove grab, and I was working and things like that. But I was glad to get out of the round, and I was grateful that McCarthy didn't stop the fight because, you know, we've had a couple buzzer beaters where, you know, with 2 seconds left in the fight, I'm like, damn, he should have just let it continue, you know, but they're not supposed to take notice of that last 10 seconds or, you know, the time on the clock. They're supposed to look after the fighter's safety. And Romero came out. He took the extra time. You know, we don't need to rehash it, but he took the extra time.
Yeah, but it didn't look good. I thought the doctors were going to stop it, Joey. Like, they came, you know, Romero was clearly pretty much out on his feet. He didn't know where his corner was. He looked like he was going to collapse. When he sat down, I'm amazed he didn't miss the stool. He sits there. Then he takes the extra 30 seconds. It was pretty bizarre, but, you know, you've been watching. You watch more fights than I do, Joe. You're watching every boxing, every everything. How many times have you seen that? You know, I know it's a trick to leave the stool in to sort of slow something down a bit. As Dana said, you know, it's the dirtiest trick in the business. But then after he's flip-flopping and saying, oh, it's our fault for putting too much Vaseline on. But how many times have you actually seen that, Joey, with a corner trying to screw around like that?
It happens all the time. Guys cut gloves. People talk. It happened with Muhammad Ali one time.
Oh, yeah. Guys pull tape all the time and stuff like that in boxing, right? Oh, my tape is loose. Better stop it for a second. Like, that happens all the time. But I'm talking about, though, I'm talking about screwing around with the stool.
I don't, you know, off the top of my head, I mean, they all even out in the end. Like, I mean, it's different fighters, different venues, everything. Everybody that complained about it said he should have been beat, you know what I mean, that Kennedy should have won the fight. In the end, they all even out. And the good thing is we probably won't have to see that fight again because outside of, you know, the last 20 seconds of that round, you know, Kennedy got pretty much beat up. And I don't want to see that fight again. I have no interest in seeing that fight again. You know, I mean, it makes for good headlines and, you know, you could have some controversy and, you know, good highlight clips and you could sell it. But, you know, let's let Romero move on. Kennedy will go on fight somebody else. I mean, you know, right now we're not talking about Kennedy in the title picture. I don't think we ever were. Romero, on the other hand, you know, he's won, what, 8 in a row or whatever. So he's got the one loss in Strikeforce, and he's come from that. And, you know, he is 37. Kennedy's up there in age, too. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, things happen in fights. It's crazy. You know what? You know, criticizing John McCarthy, I've seen some referees do some really, really bad things. Like, I've seen referees stop fights in the middle of fights to check a cut when a guy is totally out on his feet to have the doctor check a cut. Instead of just stopping it and letting the fight finish, he'll bring him over. I mean, it happens a lot. You know, it happens everywhere.
But how about the ref? You just reminded me of something. How about the ref not stopping the Cruz fight? Like, you know, Cruz lit him up, man. It's not, you know, stop it. Like, and even though I always sort of feel as if, though, they stop fights too early sometimes. But Mizugaki was basically toast. Cruz was teeing off, and the ref is standing right there watching. Like, you know, a foot away, like a spectator, like a fan. But, Joey, let's not live in the past. Here we got two cards coming up. So Gunnar Nelson, the next big hype guy from Europe, so to speak, from Iceland. So, you know, not as big much of a demographic for the UFC in Iceland as there is in Ireland. So Dana's not buying posters and putting them up everywhere. But and he's in a tougher weight class. But Gunnar's a pretty damn good fighter, Joey. You said on the TV show you want to see him go deep. Rick Story's one of these veterans. He's been around a while. He's alternated wins and losses in his last 8 fights. He's 4-5 in his last 9 fights. But in the last year or so, 2 years, a year and a half, remember he started training with champs. He went up there and he trained with GSP, and he goes to San Diego. He's raised the level of his training recently, Story. This is an interesting fight. I think Gunnar wins, but the line's a little high.
Well, you know, Story's got 2 times as many fights as him. You know, I'm just gonna sit here and try to make a case for Story. 17-8. He's got 2 times as many fights. He's only been subbed once. You know, Gunner's only been the decision one time. And much like, you know, not to rehash the past, I said that Nunes was a front runner, a lot like a lot of these Brazilians. She got beat by Kat. Props to Kat. She should get the title shot next. You know, that was a sentimental favorite. I needed Nunes, but okay, to put that past, you know, Gunnar did not look, you know, he started slow in his last bout. You know, he started slow against
Zach Cummins, yeah.
Yeah, in July, and I remember saying, wow, you know, we might see, you know, possibly see an upset here, and then he came on in the second round and just poured it on. But Story, I mean, Story's been deep. I mean, you know, two-thirds of his bouts have gone to decision. You know, he's lost 7 of them. You know, those decisions, 1-9, 16 bouts went to decision. But Story, you know, you could make a case for Story. I mean, you know, he did beat that Mafra, who was, you know, out of shootbox. And again, he's only been subbed once. He's never been knocked out. And Gunner subs guys. Gunner's, you know, KO 3 of his 13 opponents. I think it's a good fight. You know, again, we're looking at a card over in Stockholm where, you know, the last time we went overseas, not the last time, but over in Ireland, we watched those guys, they just tore it up. you know, the momentum, the crowd was electric and everything. Granted, we don't have
yeah, a lot of quick stoppages. You're right, knockouts and stuff like that. Yeah, they were on fire.
I mean, they were matched well, and these, you know, you can't say that there's any real mismatches on this card, but you can say that the, you know, that a lot of these favorites are overpriced again. But again, it doesn't matter what you lay if you win it. I mean, look at look at Connor. I was one of the few guys, I guess, in hindsight, that thought that Dustin was going to go out there and give a much better performance.
I hate when we lose, though, with those freak punches behind the ear. That's the thing. If you get crushed, yeah, you get beat up, but, you know, you sort of get grazed. It's 2 weeks in a row. Nelson lost with just sort of getting grazed and going down. Poirier went down without really getting touched very much. That's what frustrates me the most.
Yeah, I think it happens a lot in the foreign venues, or when guys, you know, when people make such a strong case for a guy to almost for it to be acceptable to lose and come back. And, you know, Connor was built up so high, and deservedly so. But, you know, again, you know, you look at Connor's record, and Connor's got a great record and everything, but going back to 2009, I mean, he's got, you know, I recall a 2009 fight. He's fighting guy with a 3-4 record.
All right, Jeff, but we just jumped all the way back here from, we're talking about,
I'm just saying,
about the Sweden like card here, yeah. Warriors. Yeah, we're talking about Sweden here.
Yeah, right. So it was his first pay-per-view. You know, again, we talked about the money. He's deserving of the money. He's the hype right now. Donald Cerrone too. Donald looked great. Chopped him down.
I know, but we're talking about the Gunnar Story fight right now, though.
What I'm saying is, this is another one of those bouts that's significant. I mean, if Gunnar goes out there and tears him up, then we have a new star. If I sit here and say Rick Story is going to upset Gunnar Nelson, then I'm on the same boat as I was with Poirier, but I won't lay the price on Gunnar Nelson. I'm not going to go lay 4-1 on Gunnar Nelson against Rick Story.
All right, so we got to take one last break here, Joey. Just quickly on this one, what's the number with the Max Holloway fight? Corsani and Holloway.
Holloway's like a 6-1 favorite.
That's insane. That's too high,
you know,
too.
It's insane if it loses. But if he goes out there again, that's the thing.
Yeah, but he's not worthy of being a 6-1 favorite. This is where the numbers are just weird.
For me.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good fighter. He's 22, tough as hell. He's fought a lot of tough guys. He's actually won 3 straight fights as well. You know, Corisani was on a 3-fight win streak before he got knocked out by Poirier in the second round of this fight. But the number's too high, Joe. You can't lay 6-1, even though Holloway's probably going to win.
I mean, Corisani's from Sweden as well. He's been knocked out 4 times, you know, including, you know, his last loss to Poirier. He didn't beat, you know, he beat Blanco, who, you know, who I think has been, you know, in a decline for some while. You know, Andy Ogle and
Peralta.
Robbie Peralta, right? But still, I mean, he's not a bad fighter. Max is tough, and he did last 3 with Connor, so you say, well, maybe, you know, he's won his last 3. He lost to Bermudez, got out-wrestled. But we are over in Sweden, and we don't know what's going to happen over there. I mean, I would think this is Akira's this is his Super Bowl.
I don't know. They're probably less corrupt in Sweden than they are in Las Vegas. So let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll take a look at the Halifax card. As I mentioned on MMA Meltdown TV that you'll see tomorrow, our boy Eric in Vancouver, the attorney, the combat sport attorney, Eric Magrak, and sent me some interesting rules for the UFC fight card in Halifax pertaining to ball shots, below the belt shots to the nuts and the groin, etc. There's some interesting rules about this this weekend that I can't believe that they're actually going to enforce, but we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with our last quick segment with Odessa.
This is the Fight Network.
All right, we've only got a couple of minutes left, unfortunately. I think we got to quite a lot of stuff tonight. I've managed the clock a lot better, unlike Andy Reid. We got something we didn't get to. It looks like Kung Lee's been popped for taking steroids. And then in other news, the sky is black tonight. In other news, Laurent Landry of the New York Jets got suspended. Or now he's on the Colts, actually. Guy's on every team in the league, him. Laurent Landry. I'm surprised he hasn't killed anybody yet, that guy. But that's besides the point. You know, it's a good thing he only got caught taking steroids. But anyways.
Was it HGH or was it steroids?
Yeah, HGH, I guess. Look at the pictures the guy was taking, Joey. Like, it's like a bank robber. You know these idiots that rob people's houses and then they post pictures on Facebook while they're in the house? That's Kung Lee. The guy takes pictures of himself.
Yeah,
he looks like the Incredible Hulk. He's got like veins everywhere sticking out. He's posting pictures. Now he gets caught. Like, you know, big shock.
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of drama going on with the UFC, the media and everything, and some good, some bad. I mean, Rashad Evans wants Gustafsson.
Rashad Evans should shut up. Why should Rashad Evans get Gustafsson? What has he done to deserve? Like, everyone, of course he wants Gustafsson. Gustafsson should get the winner. It's crap, you know, that he's got to, that he's out. I guess he got hurt,
well,
but.
He should get Cormier. Let's just say it now so I can.
Yeah, there you go. He should get Daniel Cormier. All right, so we only got a
winner of the fight.
Sucks. We only got a minute left, maybe 90 seconds, so I'll just let you talk on the way out, and we'll play music and cut you off. So, Rory McDonald and Tarek Saffiedine.
Tough fight. You know, I watched Tarek chop his last opponent down with leg kicks. It reminded me a lot of the bout this past weekend with Donald Cerrone. Five rounds. Rory, you know, kind of fights conservative. You mentioned that. A lot of those Montreal guys do. Speaking of the Montreal guys, Nordine Talib against Jing Lang Li gets moved up to the main card because of, one of these guys is out. So he got moved up to the main card, so that's a step up for Nordine. Probably a little bit more money in his pocket. Good for him. Interesting, Brian Caraway, Rafael Asanico beat T.J. Dillashaw back in 2013. Hasn't lost since. He lost to Coke in 2011, but, you know, like I said, he beat Dillashaw, who's a champ in 2013. Manny Gambarian coming off a kind of an upset win this past weekend. He's calling out Brian Caraway for the honor of Ronda Rousey. Caraway wins this fight, makes an interesting scenario. If Asanico wins the fight and Dillashaw, you know, defends the title against Barao, then we got a good mix here. There's a lot of good fights on the horizon.
Joey Odessa with us. Always a pleasure, Joey. We've got to get out of here. Thanks to Joey Odessa and Heidi Fang for joining us from Las Vegas at Nevada. Check out the podcast, fightnetwork.com. Other than that, you're on your own. Later.